February 20th, 1982, I'm interviewing Claude and Nora Hostetter to obtain the story of the beginning of camping in Oregon, which eventually leads to Drift Creek Camp. Claude, what is the first memory that you have of camp and dates and people involved?
The first that I was connected with camp in Oregon was when I came to Portland, Oregon to take over the work as superintendent of the Portland Mission, as it was known then, and that was in 1947 in June. And when we arrived, we knew that they had carried on a camping program. So that summer, in July and over into August, we also had camp. First we had Bible school, then we had camp. And for our camp, we would go out to the Hubbard area in Oregon, and on the back of Sam Miller's farm, on the Pudding River, on the bank of the Pudding River, and there was about 5 acres of land that we had our camp. It was in a grove of large fir trees, second growth fir trees, and we went out there every year. Now the camp work in Oregon started perhaps back in about 1923, when Alan Good started the work in Portland as the Portland Mission. He started primarily at first to take children out into the country as fresh air children, as they did in Chicago many years ago. And rather than putting them in homes, he had tents between the Sam Hostetler Brickyard and the Zion Church Cemetery, and he had tents there for the children to stay in. And this developed then to, in a few years, that they went over to the Sam Miller farm, because it was an ideal setting for a camp on Sam Miller's farm. And to what extent Alan continued over there, I am sort of at a loss, but I do know that I had testimony of some of the workers, namely Myrtle Miller and some of the others in the district, that the camp was sort of carried on, but more or less in a quite primitive manner. And then a few superintendents after Alan Good, Henry Yoder and Paul Roth, they also carried on the work. But then Glenn Whitaker came on the scene in about 1936, and he developed the camp to more of what we would call a camp program in our church today. He also developed, along with the tents and the children, a evangelistic service for the people in the community, but only at night. The children would stay overnight and during the day, and then the community would come in for evangelistic services. Glenn carried on for about 3 years, and then Marcus Lynn became the superintendent of the Portland Mission, and he carried on for 6 years. And then after Marcus Lynn, Paul Yoder, he developed the camp just a little bit further in starting to secure wooden floors for the tents. Heretofore, they had been pitched in on the tents had been pitched on the ground, and when the weather was undesirable, like rain and wind, why, the water would come in underneath the tents, and so he put the tents on wooden floors. And he was only there for 2 years, and then we came on the scene. And we finished developing the wooden floors, and we had a cook shack that we prepared our meals. And we also, the people, there were three churches in the area that primarily supplied the food. They were the Zion Church, the Hopewell Church, and the Bethel Church. And we took the children out, the boys for 2 weeks, and then the girls for 2 weeks. And on the Sundays that we were there, we always took the children to the, we divided them up between the three churches. And this caused quite an interest for the people of the churches, and they then on Sundays they would take them home into their homes, and then we'd get them again Sunday evening and go back to the camp. And they supplied most of the food, and what food they couldn't supply, of course, we purchased with funds from the mission. This developed also after we had the children from Portland. Some of the other churches in the valley, from the Zion Church, and then from the Fairview Church, and from the Albany Church, and from the Sheridan Church, they also asked if they could send their children to the camp. So we had a mixed group of children at the camp from the Portland congregation, and also from these other congregations which I mentioned. And we carried on like this until 1947, or 1955. We came in 47. So for 8 years, we invited these children from the other Mennonite congregations. And also at this time, there was an interest shown for camp life in the youth age of our congregation, high school and college age. And so the conference took this up, and it was at that time that we rented a facility known as White Branch from the Nazarene Church. And this was up in the High Cascades on the McKenzie River. And I was director of this camp for 1 year, but there were different directors at different times each year. And I'm at a loss to know just exactly how long this has continued. But after the we left the Portland work as the superintendent, then I think it was the Fairview congregation, in for their children, also acquired the facilities of White Branch Camp for their children. But I'm at a loss to know how long that has continued.
Nora, what memories do you have of camping?
Well, of course, this was a completely new experience for us when we first came to Portland, and but with the help of the couple of the other workers that had experienced camping before, we really looked forward to it. And it was always such a highlight for the children from the city to be able to go out to the country. And we felt that, in a way, this was really one of the most rewarding works of our time, perhaps, as we worked with the children in the summertime. We enjoyed Bible school, but the summer camp work was really very rewarding, and we thoroughly enjoyed living with these children for 2 weeks. In fact, they became like a part of our family, and at the end of those 2 weeks, we were so closely knit together that it was really hard at times to part, and the children always were very reluctant to go back into the city. And we had such good times out there. There were times of devotion that we had with them, and especially in the evening around the campfire, I think was always very meaningful. Usually Claude or one of the workers had a devotion or a story before the children retired to their tents, and also taking them down to the river to swim. That was something that they really looked forward to. I feel that living with these children for those 2 weeks meant a lot to them in their lives, and the parents too. It meant a lot to them because they would come out to visit the children, and they were always very impressed with what their children were doing. And for myself, I would say that this was really one of the real happy times and experiences that we had while we were at the church.
After we left the work in Portland, the camp was sold. In fact, the camp was sold 1 year before we left. But the man that bought the Sam Miller's place allowed us to have camp one more year yet. And so after the camp was no more on Sam Miller's place there in the Hubbard area, we had a member of the Portland congregation whose name was Ralph Shetler. And he lived up in the Silverton Hills. And he had a place that was an ideal spot for a camp. And it was known from then on as Alder Creek Camp. And the camp then carried on through the Portland Mission for a number of years. The thing that impressed me most was, like Nora said, the campfires and the swim times we spent in swimming, and it was a most rewarding time for these children when we had them out there for 2 weeks at a time to that they could see that there really was something in becoming a saved individual and becoming a Christian. And we didn't have to press them or play on their emotions for them to accept Christ, because they often willingly came to us and expressed their desire.
Claude, it appears like this work began just with the Portland Mission and branched out into the conference. And I'm wondering, did you feel good support from the conference at the time you were working the program from the mission?
Yes, I think there was good support from all of the congregations, even some of our conservative congregations. They supplied food and they supplied workers. I think the workers coming to help in our Bible school in Portland, and then they would also help us in our camp work. And then the workers that would help for the summer on a something like a voluntary service basis, when they would go back into their own congregations and tell of their experiences. I think that this is one of the areas where it gained support to the camping program here in Oregon. And soon after, afterwards, there were camping programs from other some of the other churches carried off. Carried on that finally came to the work of Drift Creek.
This is a continuation of our discussion about Drift Creek Camp. Claude and Nora Hostetter brought us up to the White Branch camping. And now I'm talking with Ori Conrad, who was involved in finding a place for Drift Creek Camp. Ori, can you share with us and explain something about starting from White Branch?
Well, we had a good camp at White Branch, but it seemed it was, some people thought it was too far, but we didn't better ourselves by distance, maybe a little. Yeah, but it seemed that we started looking around and we found out there were quite a few places, but we were satisfying a bunch of people, and all of them was a little bit of a hard thing to do, and it was a little bit hard in that situation. But we were looking around, and I happened to be over in Corvallis, and somebody told me to go down to that. I went down to the headquarters there, the forestry, and they told me about two places out at the coast, and this one was at Drift Creek, and it really sounded, we went down there, and it seemed like everybody, but I believe one on the board there, that fell right for it and thought this is where we ought to land. And but we had one fellow, he really thought, said we ought to go to Big Lake, and then they came along, and Zion then finally came along with another group place, and closer to where they were, and of course, we naturally couldn't blame them for that, and it was a good camp, but we were pretty well, in fact, we had already committed ourselves in some ways to this, and so it divided us a little somewhat, but I don't know just what you want to know from there. We went out and looked at this place.
Where was the place that the Zion Church was looking at?
It was up on the Molara Creek. I guess that was Molara River up there. And it was way up there and on top of a hill about 15 miles, from, I think, from the Zion area. And I was up there a couple of times. But we had to almost go from scratch there. And we would have been other places, too, but we... I don't know whether they ever went ahead with that or not. I don't know.
What was it at Big Lake that was objectionable?
Well, it wasn't so much the timber was dying in there, and they had these bugs in there, and the timber seemed all dying in there, and it didn't really attract us too much to go in there. The place was so much dead timber, that's what most of us. The lake was nice. So we had to make a decision, and we decided on Drift Creek, and it looked like quite an uphill business, too, because there was a lot to do there.
Was there a camp association at this time, or were you just a few men looking for a camp site?
I don't think we were really organized at that time at all. I don't think so. I think Claude Berkey just kind of been running this thing, and I remember he had a... He cared to take care of all the money, and he had his treasury, and Saul was pretty much head of this. I don't think that we were, whether we had elected people on the camp board at that time, I'm not right sure. We probably did. But.
Now, you made a comment. You feel this kind of divided the conference a bit? Some of the churches?
No, I don't think so. I know that not. I don't think so, but I do. I remember that Zion was pretty well set on that. They had a good deal down there. They had a good deal down there, and I'm not blaming them a bit. I wouldn't have blamed them if they had just went ahead on their own camp, but they didn't. And finally, I think now at this time, I think that there isn't any division about the camp in the district anymore. I don't know, and I don't know that. But there's a lot to do there yet.
Can you share some of the experiences of actually starting up the, clearing the land and that type of thing? Were you involved
in
that?
When we went out there, there was about 20 acres there, and they called that they had another name, I believe they called it the Bag or something now that we just come around here. And the fishermen used to walk up here, walk in there, and up the road to drive up the and camp there and fish there with steelhead and trout, I guess, and hunt some, I guess. But we went in there. There was no way to get into this place. On the way to wade the river, we had I remember we went in. We pulled our boots off and shoes and waded across the the river and went in and then got lost in there after we got in there. But absolutely was nothing in there. It wasn't a trail or anything. I don't remember a trail, but I guess there probably was one in there. But we've seen a lot of possibilities, we thought, and started working and put in a bridge, a log bridge. I remember I, Kendall and I was out at Pinole one summer, hewing out some logs and put a bridge up in that high water that winter and washed the whole thing out. And new planks and everything, and so then we went to Morris Brothers and bought put a cement bridge in there, which is the one still there yet. But it's been a lot of uphill business and a lot of, I finally pulled out. I was getting older and my wife wasn't very well. We never had many camps, so we missed not going out and pull taffy, I guess, at that time. But I don't know that I've got a lot more to say unless you ask me what some definite questions I probably couldn't answer.
I certainly remember your times coming out there and pulling taffy. That was always a highlight for the, the children.
Yeah, we knew we got known a lot of the kids, and a lot of the kids, I guess, remember, but it seemed like those youngsters are all growing up and married, and their kids have already forgotten it, and so.
Now, Claude Berkey was one of the main pushers of the camp.
Oh, yeah, Claude was, and Earl Cannell. Earl Cannell, he was a little different, but Earl Cannell was right in there, too. He stayed right in there from the beginning. I remember he was up along when we looked at Big Lake up there. I'm sure he was along that time. And Claude was right in there. Earl. Yeah, they'd done a lot of work. And he just resigned with this. This is his last first year. He's off of the camp board.
Yes.
And he's really done a lot in there. He has all the records, I guess his wife does. But. Well, we really had to organize on account of borrowing money and things, and we borrowed from the Mennonite Mutual, both groups, I believe, at that time, and so we just had to get ourselves together, but I think we were rather loosely organized up till this time.
You were mentioning a while ago about you had the bulldozer sitting there idling about a half a day trying to decide which way to set the building. Is that what happened in that time?
Well, we were just getting ready to put up that big building. I hate to bring this up because I guess other people would forget it as well as I do. But I just remember that instance that morning, that day we had that old cat sitting there, that one of George Emmett gave us, and sitting there just idling there. We'd all ready to go to work. But that was Claude. He was just determined that building had to go one way, and everybody else wanted to turn it. We thought the garbage dumped in the back, we didn't want it out in front. But I mean, I think it was fair enough to say anything about it. But it was just those things we run against, and I guess you run against it every time when you're going to try anything. But we used to get, finally brought in the road from the back over at Sweats, and up come that way, which is only about half as far in there. But there was a couple of places that was almost you almost looked up to the sky when you was going up. I guess that washed out, and it seems that they just shut the road up, that was all. But that was really a better road in than this other one, but never had it oiled. But someday they'll open that up over there again.
Do you recall the design of the building? Whose idea was that, and how did that come about?
Well, that's another thing that... Uh, Well, it was designed, and I think it was all designed there in Claude Berge's office. And Jim put in hours and hours and hours. I think I heard one time he had 1,000 hours on that, but he got so he couldn't keep up ahead of the carpenters, and finally the forestry shut us off. We had to quit until we got our plans done. And then we got straight, got going again. But that was they were, as far as I know, they were all. I suppose Earl probably had more to do, but Kennels was active in there in the beginning of the camp. They built the first shed out there. That Wilbur was out there, and they built that first shed out there. And then until we got into the other building, and then they just tore that all out over there. The old man, old Cameron, I can't say his name right now. What was his name? Wilbur's dad.
Ike?
Yeah. He was out there. He was out there most of the summer there, whittling out timber for the bridge out there. And then it washed down the creek. And it discouraged him away.
Yeah, I recall somebody telling me, I don't know if it's true or not, that A-frame is one of the largest A-frames in the state of Oregon.
I wouldn't be surprised. There's some big timbers in there. Yeah.
But Claude, you think, Claude pretty much designed it, and then Jim drew the plans, is that?
Well, I better not say because I don't know. Yeah. I think it happened that... And Lloyd Zier worked there at that time, too. He could probably tell you a lot of things if you go ask him, because Lloyd, I remember, he put them timbers, them big timbers up there, I think.
Well, there's a lot of people really put a lot of time in when you get all that together, you know what? There's an awful lot of work in that building.
Yeah, some of that was, some people think, of course, too many steps out there for... But if you get it all in one building for young people, that's nice. Mm-hmm. They had all them, they built them other cabins around there first, I guess.
Yeah, it's especially nice in the wintertime. I think we can all be contained in one building that way.
Well, there's a lot of people take advantage of it yet. And they go out, we don't know anything about it.
I'm Linford Hershey. This is February 26th. I'm visiting with Earl and Bernice Kennel about the beginning of Drift Creek Camp. Earl, we just talked with Ori Conrad, and he was talking about camping at White Branch. So what do you remember now from White Branch when the Mennonite Camp Association started?
Well, it was during this time we had been having some camps. The Portland Church had been having camps. And there was a group got together and thought that the Mennonite Church at this time should get a camp of their own. And so it was taken to the conference body. And after quite a bit of discussion, it was felt by some that it's just glorified recreation, and they didn't think that the conference should get into camping at this time. And then, as I remember from this group then, we called another meeting of those that were still interested in church camping, and from the group there that day, we picked, I don't know if you want to call it a committee or a group, to do some further study on how we would form a camping association, how would we build it, you know. And it was at this time then we talked about selling memberships to persons or people in the Mennonite Church who was interested in camping to raise funds to build a camp. But before we did that then, we went around. We started in looking what the possibilities, where we could find a place. softball field or and where we could build cabins, and made just kind of that sort of a inquiry. I know one thing that happened that day why we was as we was leaving, why the loggers up above someplace was logging, and it had made mud in the creek water, and the salmon, the Chinook, were running, and where North Creek comes into Drift Creek, they started to lay in that there nice clear water. Oh, and we didn't have a fishing pole or a net or anything, so we didn't have to catch any little legal fish. But as Ori and I was going out, we walked up North Creek to go to the road where our car was. Well, here was a nice big salmon laying in the creek, and he was just there, and we said, must be about dead. I'm going to throw that thing out on the ground and see how big it is. And I got in the water and just reached over and just about touched it, and that thing made a U-turn in the creek. It just wondered we didn't knock me down. And Ori, he got the biggest charge out of that. He said, that's dead fish. But anyway, after making surveys and answering a lot of different questions, and I don't know, there's a number of times we had to fill out different things. Well, anyway, the Forest Service made us this long-term lease on that property. And then one of the next things we had to do was to, at that time then, we had organized, and started to raise funds. And the Camping Association was just made up of people who was interested in camping that either bought an annual membership of $25 or a lifetime membership of $500. And so that's the way we started. Well, the next thing we had to do is get a road in there. After we made surveys and got Forest Service okay, we had to punch a road in there. And it was through George Emmert, them load, running down cats and stuff, to we punched that first road in, and then we had to build a bridge. And I remember how we felt about when we got that bridge built, how nice a looking bridge it was. And then I hadn't been out there for a while. I was acting as a church, the camp secretary at the point. And here one day in the mail, we got a letter from the Forest Service, and the forester saying that he felt sorry for us that our bridge went down the drain, that in that high water, that big log jam had come in and washed out our bridge. And I know that was really a blow to us. That,
that was following the Columbus Day storm. The Columbus Day storm was in October of 62, and then this was in January that he wrote, and the bridge had apparently gone out in November as a result of a lot of this debris upstream.
Mm-hmm. Okay, at this time now, when we're starting to, formed the association, we're starting to build the camp, actually, or clear the area. Was the conference, or people from the conference, beginning to back your work? Was it still just a few people that were really pushing it and really interested in it?
I would say that there was quite a number of people scattered all through the conference that was really interested in church camping at this time. There was probably those that didn't feel that it was the thing that the church should get into at that point yet. But we was holding camps down at White Branch, and then, of course, when we first got that camp there, I think you remember when we got out there pretty rough and had our first camps at Drift Creek.
Were you there that summer of 64 when the camp first operated out tents?
I was there one year, but I can't remember exactly what year it was. I don't think I was there the very first.
I know that Ori Conrad was there, and we didn't get out during the camping period, but our son Dwight was there. And I know it was really wet, and they had tents, and they put up that temporary shed, threw it up in 3 weeks, I guess, that stayed there for a number of years then. But Carrie Dodd from Newport was a camp nurse.
We had a a lot of people that really helped us, because we really worked mainly all the time with donated labor. And in fact, well, I think we didn't hire anybody or really have anybody on a salary until we went to put up our this big A-frame building that we have now, and we had a VS unit out there. And so we had the cost of this VS unit, and we did, we had a little allowance for Lloyd Zier, who was heading up the program, but he really didn't get all paid that much. And Lloyd led the crew out there, and I, this was already after, we had just got the footings poured for this building when Brother Claude Berge died. And Claude had been, you know, had worked on getting the building drawn up and all that. And here we just got the footings poured for that building, and Claude died. And then at that point then, I was to run down the materials and look after it. And Lester Krupp from Berge Construction helped me get out the whole list of and bill of material. And then I went around shopping where we could get the best buy, where we could get the timbers, and got that all organized and hauled a lot of it out myself with my truck. And then I got different people to haul out. I remember the day we got the shakes from over at in above Lacombe there in the Cascade Range. I had seven trucks, farm trucks, that showed up that day. And loaded all them shakes up and hauled them clear to the coast. And that was quite a day.
I think Orion made the comment, and I don't know if it's a fact or not, that this A-frame is one of the larger A-frames in the state of Oregon, or at least at one time was. Do you know?
Yes, I think that the next biggest A-frame that we that I know of is the people, the built on one of them lots up at Big Lake, and they built a type of an A-frame, but nothing, and not as big as this one that we have out there. It's a different style of an A-frame, and I really don't know of any other that's that big.
Yeah, another question I was wondering now, is the conference supporting the camp now, or is it still operated as an association?
It is still operated as an association. And there has been some feeling that maybe at this time conference would take it over. I mean, or due to our financing of Western Mennonite and put it right in with our whole conference budget, that it's one of the arms of the church, and should we look at a different type of financing for it, or a different type of an operation? But at this point yet, it is still run by this committee,
I think there is some reluctance because there are people supporting it and have supported in the past who are not a part of our Pacific Coast Conference, and they would rather see it as it is.
Okay, I want to go back just a little. Again, you mentioned the different campsites that you looked at. I remember, as I recall, that the Zion Church had picked out a location where they wanted to, or felt the camp should be located. Do you recall that? Were you involved any in working with that?
Yes. If I recall, that was the one up on...
is it the Moala River?
No.
Sure. That
wasn't that the one up on the... not Green Peter, but the... what's the lake up there we used to go fishing in?
Foster?
No. You go up the highway like going over to Bend, but you take the other route and the lake you come up along. That, you know, that dam. Oh, why can't I say that? It's the little dam below is Cliff, the big cliff dam, you know.
I don't
recall, but I just remember different ones had mentioned. I think Ori made some comments about the possibility, or about the fact that there was, and he felt at that time there was maybe a little bit of disagreement because somebody wanted to locate it one place and some another.
Well, I know we looked at that site several times, and see, some of the arguments for this was that we'd be closer to our people, to the valley, and it was really the closest site to our churches, because, and then probably our farthest one, well, I don't know, it would be the one up at Big Lake, up on the, in the Cascades.
Earl or Bernice, could you fill us in on a few dates and persons, names of people who served on the first board?
Yes, the ones we have that when we incorporated were David Mann, and Laurie Conrad, and Claude Berge, and myself, and Ben Carnegie. But then I think
George
Emmert was also in this. And, you know, that's getting to be so long, I can't really...
And what is the date now that that was
signed? Oh, this here, this was signed December the 15th, 1960. And so this is the corporation papers.
Now, is the camp located on private ground? Oh, you mentioned it was Forest Service. Has that been a good workable relationship with the Forest Service?
Sometimes, I think it's been a good. Sometimes it's been a headache, depending on who their personnel is at the time. It's hard to seem like to make a move, or some maybe get a little picky on things. But I think the overall picture, it's been good for the camp, because they have been acting as a kind of a governing body on the type of buildings that would be put on the grounds. And so I think this has kept the camp in a nice building area. Just nothing was put up shanty type, you know. It was all nice buildings that was put up. And so at that type of thing, I think it's been good. And now that we are dealing with the public and renting out the camp, why, it meets the specifications of state codes and that type of thing.
Another thing I appreciate, they stipulate what can be planted and the landscaping, where we might have had people who wanted to plant things that weren't natural. And they stipulate that things be kept natural, and I've appreciated that.
Can you fill us in a little on the development as far as personnel at the camp? Did you have all volunteer personnel? When did you have a paid director? And do you recall those?
I think that Ulin was the first paid director. I mean, I don't know if you call it paid or not, but really on a volunteer basis, I think, I can't think of anyone else before you. I think before that, it was run, we had a committee within ourselves, Claude or someone, looked after it, and we used just summer help, volunteer summer help, to operate. Mm-hmm. Do you think of anything else, Bernice?
No.
I think now at this time now, it's a year-round operation.
Right.
Where there it was more starting just a summertime operation.
Yes. And I think that we're leasing the camp. At that point, we wasn't really leasing the camp, hardly any.
To other groups.
Mm-hmm. And now we... Well, right now we have a lot of our churches that have Sunday school class retreats or church retreats, which use the camp, and then we have some of the other branches of Mennonites who are using it in their camping program.
Okay, what more things of interest do you think of as far as building the camp and working on the starting of the camp?
I just know those were great days when we went out to work together and took our families. We set up tents and had a lot of good fellowship while we were working. And before the bridge was built, there were tents set up on the other side of the river and or the creek. And one time Cliff King came and was there with us and gave us ideas on the camp, what some things we should try to incorporate in the planning.
Another person was A.J. Metzler that came out one time. And I know there were some people at this time said, why are you at this camp so far away from any place and way out in the sticks? And I know AJ thought it was just a delightful place to be. He said you wouldn't have problems with the kids running to town. Well, we never have had up there. And another interesting thing that happened when we was building the first bridge, I remember the one day we was putting Penta on the plank, and one of the fellows that was working there was David Mann, and we sat down to have a, I don't know if it was for coffee or just a rest period, and all at once David jumped up and he said, "Oh my, I'm burning!" And his Penta had soaked through his pants. And we had some real interesting times. There was a one time that I know that when Lars Neuswander had brought his little D4 cat up there to punch out trails because of the brush we went through, and it kind of turned out to be kind of a rainy day, and when he went to load that cat on the truck, he just got it on the truck, and the truck wasn't setting level, and on the steel bed the whole thing slipped and went over the side and onto its top, and most of the people were standing on the other side, and they never saw Lawrence leave the seat, and they all thought he was underneath that tractor. And that was sure a real shocking time. And of course, the next time that I know of anything serious is the time that you got burnt when you was cleaning that generator off. And I know I got the call from Les Krupp, and Les said, "I'll pick you up in a few minutes." And Les Krupp drove a Bergy van out there, and I don't think I've ever drove that fast ever to camp as we did in that. I think we even exceeded the 70 mile an hour speed limit at that time. But we got out to camp, and this diesel was still pouring out of the big tank onto the generator. And at that, and I, we had Forest Service men was around there, and all we did was take a hammer and flatten that copper tube up and stop that from keeping that fire going. There's been a lot of interesting things happen out there. And
I've heard a number of stories and talking about pack rats. What's a pack rat? What was going on about that?
Well, it seemed like we had all our big supply of pack rats out there, and they was always getting into things that they shouldn't get into. And these pack rats are just like a big rat. They got a furry, fuzzy tail. And I see we here in one of our minutes we had that B. Charles Hostetter was out there for a camp, and he wrote down things that should be taken care of at camp. And he says, his number two item, he says, take care of the rat problem. Well, that was one of the things. I remember once that Mrs. Aaron Ropp was sleeping in a tent, and a pack rat ran him across her, and she didn't think that was too sharp. And then they had rats up in the caretaker's house once, and George Emmert and a couple of us went up there, and so we went upstairs to look at the bed, and we lifted up the bed spring, and out jumped a pack rat, and he sat right on the edge, and George had a .22 pistol with him, and he shot him. And that was something to talk about for a while, too.
Earl, how long were you involved with the camp, and do you feel now, as you look back, that what was done was a good thing? Do you feel it's making a contribution to the total church program in the Pacific Coast Conference?
Yes, it just here the first of the year, I finished, I'm completed 21 years on the board, and I think, as I feel about it now, this has been one of the committees that I've really enjoyed serving on. And in fact, I miss this being on this board. But as a help to the church, I think we had times of low ebb through that. Maybe we was pressing too much for getting our building program done and wasn't giving enough toward the program part of it. And I know that was really easy for the board to keep working with this, getting the facilities built. And maybe we lacked a little on the program part. But I feel now that we have leveled off, we're working more on the program, and I really see a real asset in this thing for our conference. And the churches that have really backed up our church camping, and they're the ones that have the most youth attending. And to them, they're really gaining on that, really reaping a harvest over it. It's really got people out, people that are, haven't been brought up in the Mennonite Church, that have went out into church camping, has really, really helped bring some of them people in to the church. You know, I feel personally that when a family that has children and they sponsor a child of their own children's age, or the church sponsors one of these children and is invited by this family to go to church, to the camp, is a lot better than just going out and trying to pick up someone. I think what I've seen, that those that are invited by the family and they've went along with their children, now they're the same age, it seems like we've made the biggest growth through that. Now, I don't know how you look at that, but that's some things.
Well, I too feel that this is making a real contribution to our church and the youth and adults. Looking back, I think the emphasis at the time the camp was begun was on the work with MYF, and I don't think any of us envisioned what would happen in family camping and adults, and I just really feel the picture has changed a lot, and I feel really good about the program that is being carried on now and the people who are giving of their time now to make this camp go.